A decade of widowerhood had accustomed me to solitude. After my daughter Kay left home, I had begun, guiltily at first, to relish my quiet house and self-indulgent ways. Well-meaning friends who had attempted in the early days to pair me with some kindred spirit, deprived by death or divorce of her spouse, now only rarely called upon me to make up numbers when they entertained. Then I fell in love. It happened that my cousin Ruth, short of a man at her dinner party and bribing me with the promise of an excellent bœuf en croûte, had persuaded me from home. The other guests were paired, except for one. As she turned to face me and my cousin said, "Jack, dear, meet Phoebe," my life was, quite simply, changed. Needless to say, I concealed the intensity of my reaction and, during dinner, paid her no more attention than the situation demanded. Phoebe had, my cousin later informed me, sotto voce as she poured the coffee, recently ended a relationship. She needed to get out and meet people without being pestered by pushy males. I was careful not to push, confining myself to amusing Phoebe, encouraging her to laugh, talk, feel at ease. And she responded. Without in any way neglecting our fellow guests, she made me feel... Well, you may imagine how I felt. This glorious girl sitting beside me, paying attention to me, seeking me out, brandy glass in hand, as we mingled after the meal, allowing me to entertain her. I was enchanted. "Well," said Ruth, handing me my coat when the evening was over, her eyes challenging, mine evasive, "you certainly hit it off with Phoebe. Such a pity she's not, well, in the right age group." It was true. Phoebe was half my age, only a few years older than my daughter Kay, whom she knew socially and remembered from high school. The silent emptiness of my house seemed less attractive after that dinner party. And when, 2 weeks later, my daughter and her husband invited me to join them and their friends for a lunchtime barbecue, I accepted gladly. The summer weather was oppressive, and thunderheads were massing over the downs. Kay and John's garden runs down to a river. The prospect of a swim was appealing, so, with a couple of bottles of well-chilled Chardonnay and my swimming things on the back seat of the car, I drove over. I wasn't expecting to see Phoebe, having forgotten that she and Kay were acquainted. I had assumed we never would, never should, meet again. But there she was, perched like a naiad on the wooden jetty, draped in white toweling, her hair dripping down her back. At 6 o'clock, as the party broke up, the heavens opened. Borrowing an umbrella from Kay, I ran, with Phoebe on my arm, through the downpour to her car. The MG, an early 60s model, was, on Phoebe's own admission, highly unsuitable for someone without mechanical skills, but she adored it, called it Hermione, and suffered a succession of breakdowns with equanimity. "Do you like Italian?" Phoebe inquired, cranking down the rain-spattered window, and without waiting for a reply, continued, "There's a great place in Chislethorpe." I nodded dumbly, smiling, I imagine, like a loon. "See you there," she said, putting her foot hard down on Hermione's accelerator, gravel flying from her spinning tires. The place was crowded. I found Phoebe at the bar, sipping a dry martini. 5 minutes later, we were shown to a corner table. After that, she and I met once, sometimes twice a week. A mutual passion for foreign films drew us from one corner of the county to the other. Side by side, in the darkness, we patronized cinemas ranging from village flea pits to smart multiplexes. Fellini, Bergman, Adlon, Bertolucci. We watched and watched again. On our first date, Phoebe had insisted on paying for our supper, since she had, she reminded me, invited me to join her. I indulged her, taking my revenge a few weeks later by giving her dinner at Lovage's, a restaurant second only to the prohibitively expensive and internationally renowned Peacock's, which, in my fantasies, I was already reserving for a future and most particular occasion. She accepted the meal, gracefully enough, but always insisted on paying for her ticket when we went together to the cinema. For months we enjoyed each other's company. I told her of my long and happy marriage, and of my difficulty in making sense of life when Alice died. She discussed with me the three major love affairs which had convinced her that a successful relationship would elude her. When I suggested that she might be happier with an older man, she laughed. We both laughed. It seemed I had no choice but to live from day to day, reminding myself firmly that for Phoebe and me, there could be nothing beyond our easy platonic friendship. Occasionally my willpower would falter, and I would briefly indulge myself, imagining Phoebe in other circumstances. Fantasies in which the difference in our ages became irrelevant, and we would move from friendship towards other joys. So we continued, through the winter and on towards spring. We walked through snow on the downs and along the windy, pebbled beaches of the south coast, lunching at country pubs. Once, after a sobering incident when Hermione, having slithered into a ditch one frosty night, had to be hauled out by my BMW, Phoebe, slightly shaken and very grateful, had kissed me. Her lips, soft and light on my cheek, the air around her flavoured deliciously by her scent. On another occasion, under mistletoe and Cousin Ruth's sharp eyes, Phoebe hugged me, and I briefly felt her narrow body in my arms, her smooth, cool cheek against mine. In April, a month before my 60th birthday and over a fragrant plate of moule marinière, Phoebe casually inquired how I intended to celebrate the occasion. She was shocked when I protested that beyond one's 50th, birthdays are unworthy of celebration. For no sane person wishes to be reminded of the relentless march of time, the imminent grip of old age, the approach of death. She chastised me. Her emphasis startling diners at neighbouring tables. What rubbish, Jack, you're in your prime. It's so unfair. Women lose the bloom of youth, while you men simply acquire an interesting patina. The subject was dropped. A few days later, after watching Jules et Jim, she linked her arm through mine and solemnly invited me to dine with her on my birthday. I accepted, of course. She refused to tell me where we were to eat, but there was a suppressed excitement about her which convinced me it was to be Peacock's. Peacock's, famous for its eccentric host, its world-beating specialities, and above all, for its ambiance. The Gothic building was reputed to overlook floodlit gardens where fountains plashed into an ornamental lake, where the scent of roses, honeysuckle, lilies drifted through the galleried dining rooms. This was where the rich came to impress, where famous lovers exchanged their vows. I ordered a new suit. It was cut from a fine charcoal grey wool, had soft shoulders and a fashionable fluidity of line. I had to admit, as I scrutinised my appearance in the tailor's looking glass, that it flattered me. A barber in Jermyn Street persuaded me to wear my hair slightly longer at the nape of my neck than was my habit. Phoebe's plan was to pick me up in Hermione and drive me to our secret destination. I was ready an hour too soon, and so nervous that I took a stiff scotch as I listened for the sound of Hermione's erratic engine. I'm unsure what my hopes were for that evening, but was certain that by the end of it, my relationship with Phoebe would have progressed from merely friendship, however delightful that had been, to something else. Something I hardly dared imagine. Phoebe had revived me, kick-starting emotions that had been buried, first by grief and then by time. I was no longer an aging widower sidelined into a quiet decline. Boosted by the whiskey, my self-confidence burgeoned. What did age matter? For almost a year, Phoebe and I had been virtually inseparable. The scotch burned reassuringly down. I spread my fingers, not a tremor, steady as a rock, calm, masterful, and rose to my feet as the sound of the car reached me. In the drive, Phoebe leaned across to open the passenger door. Her lips wished me a happy birthday and touched mine. Then I was buckling my seatbelt as the car plunged forward, lurched down the drive and squealed out onto the main road. She drove fast with her usual exhilarating flair in the direction of the restaurant. The hood was down. A warm slipstream smelling of primroses and may blossom poured past us. Conversation was impossible, so from time to time we smiled at one another through the roaring air. "Small detour," Phoebe yelled, wrenching the wheel. "Left my jacket at Kay's. Need it for tomorrow. Won't take a second. Okay." Of course it was okay. Nothing that Phoebe could ever do would not be okay. "She loves me," I thought. "She knows what I'm feeling, what I'm planning. I won't push her. I won't pin her down or be possessive, but our relationship will change. Has to change. She wants it to change. And tonight at Peacock's, we will decide how it will change." She took the car swiftly up the familiar lane to Kay's house, where a solitary light in an upstairs room glimmered through the twilight. When there was no response to Phoebe's knock on the front door, she turned her concerned face to me. I suggested that Kay and John might be down by the river. We skirted the house, the profound silence broken only by the sound of our footsteps crushing the gravel. The jetty was deserted. Behind the house, the terrace lay in shadow. There seemed to be something white on the long garden table. I stared at it, trying to discern what it was, Phoebe at my elbow. The table, I realized, was laden with a feast. There were platters of food, piles of plates, groups of glasses, and clusters of napkins folded prettily into water lily shapes. Suddenly the scene erupted violently with sound and light. People poured out, bellowing and laughing through the open doors of the house. I stood transfixed. Phoebe, facing me now, was smiling, laughing at my gobsmacked expression. "Surprise!" she shouted. It was the word the others were howling all around me. Kay, John, Cousin Ruth, acquaintances, neighbours, streaming out of the house, drinks in their hands, grinning, laughing, pumping my hand, slapping my back. "Surprise!" they roared. "Surprise!" Phoebe put her arms around me and kissed me on both cheeks. "Happy 60th. Dear old Jack. Happy 60th. I managed, of course, to put a good face on it. There were hours of eating, drinking, dancing, even. At the end of it, Phoebe was judged to be unfit to drive, and it was decided that she should stay overnight with Kay and that Cousin Ruth would take me home. For miles, I watched the familiar road unwinding in the relentless glare of the headlights. "Such a darling girl," Ruth said at last, with a brief sharp glance in my direction, trying, I knew, to read me. Then, sulkily resigning herself to my silence, "And so fond of you, Jack. Tonight was her idea, you know." I can see their faces. I shall always see their faces, blurred, except for Phoebe's face. I can hear their voices, and through them, Phoebe's voice. "Happy 60th, dear old Jack."